Well, thank you all very much for coming to this briefing on Governor Branstad and Lieutenant Governor Reynolds' blueprint on how we can transform Iowa's schools. We'll plan to spend from 8 to 9 o'clock this morning laying out the big pieces of the plan. Jason Glass will do that in a minute, and then answering your questions. And I'm going to have to duck out at 8:30 for a few minutes, but Jason will be here, and then the governor and Lieutenant Governor will be in at 9 o'clock. So with that, we'll get started.
Sure.
When you're talking for a long period of time, can you pull the mic?
Oh, sure. We can sit closer. Sure. Well, good morning. I'm Jason Glass. I'm the State Director of Education. And I'd like to walk you through the education blueprint and then discuss the components of it, and then we'll open it up for questions. So the framework of this blueprint is built from looking at high-performing and fast-accelerating systems around the United States and around the world. Sure. If you guys want to move those closer, you can. Particularly a good starting point for that is to look at the McKinsey & Company report from 2010, how the world's most improved school systems keep getting better, which lays out a framework of poor to fair to good to great to excellent schools. And they make the point that school systems around the world fall along that continuum in some way. And they're particularly interested in looking at what are the school systems that are making an effort to move from one of those levels to the next. What are they doing? And so we studied those systems as well, and then considered and thought about the context in Iowa, the story in Iowa, and the work that's already been done here. There has been a tremendous effort put in place in Iowa previously around ensuring equity for students in terms of access and in terms of equity of service. So all kids have access to a good school, and all kids have access to basic levels of programming, basic levels of service from the school. So there's been a lot of emphasis and effort put into that in Iowa in the past. There's also been a great deal of effort and work put in into teacher quality in Iowa, more so than in most other states. So a lot of emphasis and work around teacher mentoring and induction. A lot of work around trying to improve the licensure system. So Iowa has what's called a tiered licensure system, which is different than some other states. So you have to demonstrate competence to get into teaching, and then to gain a higher level of license, you have to also demonstrate competence. So that's stronger than other states, too. And the state has done a lot of work in trying to just raise the quality of the education profession, and also around evaluation systems. The evaluation system in Iowa is better than in most other states. All these are positives to build on, but they all also present areas for improvement. When we look at these high-performing systems from around the world and think about what lessons we learn from them and think about which of those ideas make sense in Iowa, we have to take into account the context, the history of this place, and the work that's been done before. Our blueprint focuses on three main areas of education reform, and so I'll lay those out to you, and then we'll get into the detail on them. The centerpiece of this effort is around improving or having great teachers and principals in every building, and that's really in any effort to improve schools. You have to improve the teaching, you have to improve the instruction, and that happens in a variety of ways. So if you'll look at page 3, I'll walk you through the elements of that, the things that we're recommending, suggesting. First is around attracting and supporting talented educators, and that comes with raising the starting pay to attract better candidates into education, providing scholarships so more of the brightest students choose education as a career path, being more selective about who gets into our teacher education programs through mechanisms such as raising the GPA, and using initial screening assessments and setting a cut point in those assessments so we make sure that we're getting top talent coming into teacher education programs. Looking at some of the elements of perseverance and leadership that organizations like Teach for America use when they screen teacher candidates. also raising the bar on making sure that our candidates that come, that graduate from teacher education programs, have had exposure to a depth of content, knowledge, coursework. Improving the field-based experience, and so making sure that the candidates that graduate from our systems have, or from our teacher education programs, have a great deal of field-based or clinical student teaching experience, hands-on experience. And one of the things that we'll talk about in a minute is we want to create a system of mentor and master teachers all across the state. So every school in Iowa has a mentor and a master teacher role. And one of the positives of that is that you potentially could place a student teacher then in any school in the state rather than just the schools that are right around your higher education institutions being where all the student teachers get jammed in. So frequently you have the teacher education programs just begging the schools that are close by to them, please take our student teachers. And so we want to expand that out and allow student teachers to be placed anywhere in the state. We also want to expand the alternate pathways into teaching, into the principalship, and into the superintendency. And that's not to say that we think these would ever overcome the traditional pathway or the teacher education program, but we've been systematically excluding talent from our educator workforce. The people that are mid-career, late-career, that want to come into teaching and education are not going to take the same path that a 22-year-old would to come into teaching. And so if we want to bring that talent into education, we're going to have to open our alternative pathways. Next major area around great teachers and principals, making sure that we have them in every building, is this improved recruiting and hiring practices. So we'd like to create a one-stop shop for posting of education jobs in the state. We have a Teach Iowa website right now, but I think we ran a search on it last week, and it said there were 3 jobs in the Des Moines metro area. There are more than 3 jobs in the Des Moines metro area in education. So we're not getting all our districts to post jobs to a central repository. And so if you're a teacher looking for work in Iowa, you have to really look at 350 districts. And if you want to apply to them all, you have to apply to 350 districts in 350 different ways. And you have a whole separate and complex process of licensure to go through. So we'd like to stitch that system more closely together where we have a one-stop shop for jobs, for applications, for applicant tracking, we can also use that system to screen for dispositions on or characteristics of good teaching. So there are measures in place where you can have prospective teachers answer questions about do they put students first? Do they believe that their efforts make a difference in students' lives? Do they have a preponderance toward building quality relationships with students? And so these are things that we can screen people on. If we have a statewide system, we could do that. We'd like to create more reciprocity with other states, so allow educators who have licenses with other states to more easily come and gain licenses in Iowa. My wife was licensed in New York, Colorado, Ohio, and Ohio before she came here, and she had to start over completely to come to work in Iowa. So there's lots of expansion that could be done around creating more reciprocity with other states. And finally, in this area, we'd like to see a multi-step hiring process. The research on how educators are hired indicates that in many cases, teachers are hired as a result of one interview by one person. So that's how selective we are in terms of who gets hired into teaching. So we have many schools in the state that already have a multi-step hiring process. We'd like to make sure that happens everywhere in the state. We'd actually like to make sure that we have building level teams made up of teachers that work in buildings as the first step in that hiring process to make sure that we have the people working in buildings involved in the hiring process. I'll cover these next 3 areas together, and they are creating teacher leadership roles, a meaningful peer-based evaluation system, and a transformational salary structure. And I will cover them all together because they all sort of work together. You have any comments at this point?
No.
Yeah, okay. And if you'll turn to page 6, maybe we can look at the graphic that's there, and I think maybe it can cover what we're getting at best. What we're suggesting is a 4-tier salary structure across the state, with apprentice level, career teacher level, mentor teacher level, and master teacher level. And so this would replace the traditional step and lane pay system that's been in place in schools across the country for nearly 100 years now. And incidentally, the step and lane pay system was invented right here in Des Moines, Iowa. So we can lead the country again with a new compensation structure. The teachers in their first 3 to 5 years would be in this apprentice level, and then on recommendation from their principal, they would move to the career teacher level. There would be a substantial pay increase that would come with that change. We would then have about 15% of the educator workforce would be in these mentor teacher roles, and 5% would be in the master teacher roles. So those two teacher leadership roles, the mentor teachers and the master teachers, would be competitive search processes. They would be highly selective in terms of who gets into those. And the principal PLE that we're going for here is that every building across the state has a mentor and a master teacher role. And so what we're trying to do is create teacher leadership roles across the whole state. Now, this is not new for Iowa. Iowa's attempted this before. And the issue in the past has been that when you try and do this with standalone, set-aside funding, and either the funding's not there or the political will's not there, this teacher leadership role pathway goes away, dries up. And so what we're trying to do is reallocate and more strategically use the funds that we have in education to create these roles with the money that's currently available. So this is a strategic use of resources, a more thoughtful use of the resources that we currently have. So we're going to reallocate the funds that we use in Step and Lane to be instead put in this four-tier structure. Another advantage of the four-tier structure is it allows us to compress the salary scale. And what we mean by that is you, right now you come into education making $30,000 to $35,000 and you leave making $70,000 to $75,000. And you ratchet up very slowly across a number of years to get to those higher levels. We'd like to compress the scale, meaning that we raise the new teacher pay, raise the pay that you make early in your career, and that's both to attract better talent and to keep talented educators in the field in their early years. We have terrible attrition rates across this country for educators that are in their first 5 years. This system would come with additional days. The apprentice teacher and the career teachers would work 5 additional days beyond where they're working now. The mentor teachers would work 10 additional days, and the master teachers would work 20 additional days. And that creates more flexibility for extended day, extended year options for schools that they currently don't have. Especially with the mentor and master teacher roles, you can now get into because you have these talented educators that you have extra time with, you can take your kids that are behind or your kids that have the greatest needs and put them with the educators that have the most skill. And it's also to recognize that in these master and mentor teacher roles, instead of just 20 or 30 kids being exposed to them in the case of an elementary teacher, we're going to take these talented educators and spread them across the entire building. So the influence of their positive teaching practices can spread and grow. And we've seen the system be effective in other countries and here in the United States with a model such as the Teacher Advancement Program. This would also come with a peer-based evaluation system. So we one of the strengths that's currently in Iowa is that Iowa paid a lot of attention to having a quality evaluation system for educators, in that it was aligned with what research said good teaching was, and they put in place a reliability or a training system to ensure some consistency in the evaluation. That was good work. It was based on research from the late 90s, but it's time that we picked that up again, and it's time that we improved on it again. So it's time now that we begin in earnest the work of improving the evaluation system again, and including peer-based measures, peer-based components of the evaluation system will be part of that. So every teacher, every year, would be evaluated in a coaching function by their mentor teacher. So they have a mentor teacher that evaluates them purely from a coaching position. a master teacher that evaluates them, and their principal that would evaluate them in an annual and summative evaluation that would count for their personnel record and their career progression decisions. Once fully implemented, we believe that this new salary structure also creates opportunities for lots of different options that we currently don't have in the existing compensation structure, like paying for advanced degrees in content area, paying more for national board certification, more pay for working in high poverty schools or high need subject areas. And so again, those are all more strategic uses of resources than what we've currently been using. So I'm sure there will be lots of questions on the teacher leader roles and the salary structure and the evaluation system. So
and all new teachers would go into the new four-tiered structure, but teachers already in the system could choose to stay in the current step and lane system, or they could move over. If they move over, it's a permanent switch.
Yeah, thank you. Excellent point. And we pull that thinking from the transition that Denver Public Schools went through. Denver Public Schools left the step and lane pay system in the mid-2000s. And they used a model of allowing teachers that were currently on the step and lane system to stay, or anyone that wanted to transition could, and all new teachers hired would be on the new system. So their system is called ProComp, and now they have over 80% of their teachers on the new system here over 5 years out. Excuse me. Any other points on that?
No,
okay.
So.
I'm sure there'll be more questions. So. The next element in terms of improving the quality of the educator workforce is around job protections based on effectiveness. So we already have a tiered licensure structure in place in Iowa where if you're not if you don't demonstrate effectiveness, you don't get a higher level license. You don't get a standard license. And so the issue is that that's just not used very often, nor is the dismissal process used for ineffective teaching. Everyone knows that there are ineffective educators. Everyone knows that there are differences in educator quality from one teacher to the next. We need to recognize that and have a open, honest process by which we remove educators who are not effective. And that we're advocating that because we will have a valid and reliable evaluation process that involves peers in that evaluation, the due process system for dismissal would go from the recommendation of a principal to the superintendent to the school board, and the school board has the authority to act on the dismissal. So that changes the current system, which allows an appeal to the state Supreme Court. So we're compressing the due process system to all happen locally. This would also not allow for last in, first out, seniority-based layoff procedures. And so if our goal really is that we want the most effective educators in front of kids, last in, first out, seniority procedures are not in keeping with that value. And so we would recommend that the state adopt a process by which school needs, teacher certification, performance all come into play in the decision ahead of seniority in that process. So that's job protections based on effectiveness. The last component of this first major area, which is all around how we make sure we have great teachers and principals in every building, is this free principals to lead. The school administration manager program is already in state, and I see our friend Dan Smith is here, and SAI has been a good leader in expanding that program statewide. The school administration manager is a person that comes in and takes over a lot of the administrative functions of running a school, such as attendance, accounting, lunches, things like this that are non-instructionally related or core functions of running a good school building, and runs those sort of accounting processes for a principal, which frees the principal up to work more in the leadership and the instructional side. And so that's a system that's already in place around Iowa. We'd just like to see it taken to scale. So let's press on to the second major area, high expectations and fair measures. It's beginning on page 8. It high expectations starts with having clear, rigorous, high standards for students, and the Iowa Core was a step in that direction, and so was the merger of the Iowa Core with the National Common Core standards. So these are not perfect documents. Neither one of them are perfect documents, but they hold the promise of lifting standards across Iowa and across this country to be on par with the highest performing systems in the world. And so this is a process that we're engaged in and that we will continue to engage in, setting high expectations for students that are clear, that are taught, is the first step to becoming a world-class school. School system. So we will continue the work of the Iowa Core. With that, once you set high expectations and you see that they're being taught, you should also align your measures to those expectations. And so we're recommending a next-generation assessment framework that would involve the smarter balanced assessments in grades 3 through 8. Iowa is now a governing state in the development of the smarter balanced assessments, which are computer adaptive assessments that are aligned with the National Common Core. They are currently in development, so we can't adopt them today, but Iowa will be involved in the development of these assessments over the next 3 years. And then before 2014-15, Iowa will have a decision to make, and we will look and see if the Smarter Balanced Assessments delivered on the promise that they had, and if so, we can think about moving to those assessments for grades 3 through 8. If not, we can look at the Iowa assessments that are currently in place or different configurations, but what we're trying to get to is you need a tight alignment of what is your written standards, what's being taught, and then what's being measured, and so that systems, those systems are sort of loosely coupled in Iowa right now, and so we need to better align that system. We're also recommending that our goal is having world-class schools in Iowa, and so we want to check in against do we have world-class schools, or where are we in that journey? And so we're recommending a sampling of ninth graders every 3 years take the Program for International Student Assessment, or the PISA test, and that can serve as an international check-in. We are recommending that we put in place a suite of end-of-course assessments at the high school level in algebra, biology, U.S. history, or government, and the purpose of that is really, again, to more tightly stitch together what's your written standards, what's being taught, and then what's being measured. And so we have that's really loosely coupled at the high school, and so that's an attempt to pull that together.
In English language arts.
In English language arts. That was a big one to leave out. Reading and writing also part of that end-of-course assessments. I have come out and said that I favor all 11th graders taking the ACT. I think that we would be open to another college entrance exam, such as the SAT, as well. What the purpose of that is to better give Iowa comparative data across other states. Right now, 9 states take the ACT. Is it 8 or 9?
I believe it's 9.
9 states have all students take the ACT, and we would then be the 10th state. So we'd have that comparison data across other states around the country. And also the even larger driver for me is that I want to give every kid in Iowa one of the keys that they need to get into college, and ACT is one of those keys. And so we will have kids that will take this assessment that thought that they didn't have what it took to go to college, and hopefully have some more kids open their eyes to their possibilities.
One piece I might jump in with that we skipped, the kindergarten assessment. We want to have a kindergarten.
We're proposing a kindergarten assessment that students would take to see where they are coming in from preschool or not preschool, but coming into kindergarten, how ready are they? And this ties into a piece that we haven't gotten to yet, but it's ensuring third grade literacy. We're looking at adopting a program very similar to one in place in Florida that would put much more emphasis on early literacy skills starting in preschool and moving through kindergarten, first and second grade. if children aren't reading by the end of third grade, we'd end social promotion and give those children far more intensive services with high-quality teachers, including offering summer school before fourth grade. But that early, that kindergarten assessment is another opportunity to identify children who really need additional help early. We don't want to hold anyone back. We want to identify children who need more assistance early on, so they're reading by the time they get to third grade and before they leave third grade.
Do you want to go ahead and talk any more about the third grade since you have to go?
Sure. Let me just add a few more comments about the third grade literacy program. When I first heard about it, the idea of retaining third graders for me personally was not very appealing. When I looked to see what Florida had done, however, it looked to be a very successful program. And here's kind of the big picture, and then I'll come into some of the smaller pieces. In 2002, when Florida started its literacy program for third graders, its National Assessment of Educational Progress fourth grade reading score was 214. It's now 226, higher than Iowa's. Ours is 221. And all the Hispanic children alone in Florida have an average NAEP fourth grade reading score of 223. So all the Hispanic children cumulatively in Florida are reading at a higher rate than all Iowa children. And many of those children in Florida were English language learners. So what the program did was to use this very strong big stick of third grade retention to get everyone's attention from educators to parents on the importance of making sure kids read before they get out of third grade. And so they put a lot more effort into teaching early literacy skills, say starting preschool, kindergarten, first, second, third grade, and then a lot of additional help making sure they fine-tuned their instructional strategies for reading and just generally really lifted the boat on that system. And so that's why we're taking a very close look at that and are recommending we adopt a similar program.
Thanks. You got a roll?
I will be back shortly.
So we're about halfway through, so thanks for hanging tough as we go through all these recommendations.
Do you need to turn that up?
Oh, toward me? There you go. Another component that we're recommending is the adding of value-added measures in Iowa. Value-added measures are, in my professional opinion, if you're going to look at student growth data, you should use a value-added approach. They take into account student background characteristics and look at prior student assessment results to generate a trajectory or a projection of where students should fall in the future, and then evaluate educators, schools, districts against programs against did the student meet their expectation or not. Value-added measures are controversial. Especially when driven down to the individual teacher level, and the stories out of New York and Los Angeles around where the newspapers open records requested and then ranked and published all the teacher value-added results, I think are inappropriate uses of the information. So we'd like to have value-added data available in Iowa. It's an incredibly powerful analytical tool for schools, but it should be used for improvement and not for blame and shame. And so we would make the value-added results part of the employee record and thus not subject to open records requests. A new accountability system. Some of you probably heard from Secretary Duncan and President Obama that they were allowing states more flexibility around designing state-driven accountability systems. We'd like to see Iowa participate in that effort to design a new accountability system for the state. We will work with key educator groups from across the state in the creation, the design, the construction of that accountability system. But at its heart, it should involve more than just how many kids cross the proficiency bar as a measure of success or failure in schools. It should also involve taking into account student growth or how much students improve over time. And it should involve more than just student test results. We should take into account there's a whole lot more when that comes with being a successful school or being a healthy and successful student than just a test result. So we can look at measures of student hope, engagement, and well-being as part of the accountability system, staff working conditions, parent satisfaction, and include other key indicators such as graduation rates, attendance rates, and making sure that school districts are good stewards of taxpayer dollars. And so this gives us a much broader dashboard or framework of accountability than just using achievement results on their own. And then school districts that demonstrate success through that broad system, that broad set of measures, have earned their autonomy from the state, from the Department of Education. We won't be visiting them other than to say, great job, or what did you do, so we can learn from you and take those ideas elsewhere. And then we will work to realign the systems within the department around accreditation, school improvement, and compliance monitoring to better target those resources and supports to schools that are in the lowest 15%. And that's in line with Secretary Duncan's requirements around waiver requests. Linda already talked about the third grade literacy that's on the bottom of page 10, so we'll skip over that. And jump right to the last area. So far we've covered what are the strategies around making sure that we have great teachers and leaders in every building. We've talked about high expectations and fair measures. And the last area that we'll talk about is the spirit of innovation. So what we learn about the best organizations is that they never sit still. They're always adapting and improving and evolving. And so we have to, we learn from studying high-performing systems in the world as well that exceptional school systems have system-sponsored innovation, system-sponsored experimentation. And so we need to inject that into Iowa as well. There are already a number of innovative practices happening here around the one-to-one movement that's taken hold in several places around the state, and the competency-based education movement that's taking hold around the state as well. I'll talk a little more about that. But the specific strategies around sort of system-sponsored innovation or injecting innovation into the education system involves creating an innovation acceleration fund, which would be a competitive grant process held annually where school districts or communities would identify local educational problems. They would come up with evidence-based and innovative solutions to those problems, and then we'd have a competitive process by which the most aggressive and most likely to succeed of those approaches would be funded through this innovation acceleration fund every year. Another tactic or strategy we'll use around innovation is increasing school innovation. And the first part of that comes with allowing local school districts more flexibility around statute to do innovative things that don't exactly fit in the current statutory configuration. We'll ask for greater waiver authority from the legislature around educational issues so that when a school district comes forward with an innovative idea that meets the spirit of the law but doesn't exactly meet the letter of the law, we'd like to be able to waive those requirements. We can put that through a process such as the state board and then report back to the legislature every year on what we've waived for full transparency and accountability, but to try and provide school districts more flexibility in how they serve kids. We also want to expand the pathways for charter schools in the state and increase the number of charter schools in the state. We think that we can establish a transparent and multi-step process where charter schools come into being, where they demonstrate feasibility for wherever they're going to, whatever community they're going to work in. They demonstrate that they have a plan that has the capacity to be successful for kids. They're held to the same accountability standards as other schools. They're open to any student because they're public schools, so they're not able to cherry-pick high-performing students, so we make sure kids in poverty and kids with disabilities can get into them. And when they're held to that same level of accountability as other schools, if they're ineffective, if they're failing, then they are closed. So charter schools should be looked at as a method to experiment, to innovate with different approaches around the state. And if these innovations and experiments are not effective, they need to be closed, and we need to find better options for kids. So we're recommending an expansion in charter schools. Increased online learning options, so the creation of an Iowa online academy that would provide a clearinghouse of high-quality online education options for the state, where schools could purchase courses from this online clearinghouse that we make sure is backed by a high-quality educator and a high-quality program. Anytime, anywhere learning and ending the factory model of education, that refers to competency-based education. So at the heart of that is if a student can demonstrate mastery or competence in a subject area, so if they can show you that they've mastered Algebra 1, why do they have to sit in the seat time to earn the credit for Algebra 1? And so if we move toward that competency-based approach, we can open a lot more interesting options for kids, and how we use we can start thinking about internships, externships, closer coordination with community colleges and higher education options once we get kids sort of unbound from the time-based system that we currently have in place. And so this is an innovation. We don't really know how to do this, or there are some other states and places that have experimented with it, but that's why it's in this innovation bucket. It's something that we should be thinking about and trying. And we have some districts around the state that are already doing this in some forms, and I'd like to see them supported and grown. And the last element is a statewide parent and community engagement network. We have a system already in place in a small, on a small scale in Iowa that works to build relationships with communities and reach out to parents and get them more engaged in their kids' education, particularly in high-poverty schools. And so I'd like to see that taken to scale statewide. So we talk a lot about how do we get parents more involved, and we complain a lot that we don't have parents involved in their kids' education, but it's time that we stepped up and did something about it. So this is an effort to do that. So that's the scope of the plan. Our goal is, of course, a world-class schools, and we've put in some definitions of what we think that means, what we think we need to be shooting for. And so I won't belabor you by reading through all of those. There are questions around the financial considerations. How much will this cost? And my very unsatisfactory answer to you is it depends. It depends on how much of this Iowa wants to do and how quickly we want to do it. I would certainly press that we need to do all of this. We need to do all of it as quickly as we possibly can in a reasonable way that allows for a probability of it being successful. But we need to push at implementing this as quickly as we can. We are currently engaged in the work of financial modeling around this. We would not put forth a plan that we didn't think Iowa could afford or shouldn't do. And it's important to keep in mind that what we're laying out here is not a plan for the next set legislative session. This is a plan for the next decade. And so if we think about the resources that we will put into education over the next decade, we want to use those resources and apply those resources in more strategic and thoughtful ways than we have in the past. So this plan, if we can get a broad collaborative agreement behind it, it should be the blueprint for where our resources now and in the future go into education to drive our system toward being world-class. This plan is comprehensive and it's sweeping. I think it can be argued that it's one of the more sweeping and aggressive education reform plans in the history of the United States. It is a comprehensive plan that lays out a coordinated set of activities or strategies that need to be implemented over a long period of time. It is not intended as a list of options that should be cherry-picked. It is intended as a comprehensive package that should be taken together. We will work over the next several weeks to get feedback on these recommendations and think about what order or how much support there is for them. I believe and hope that there will be great support for them. And we have to work to put in place a system that transcends traditional party politics that is broader than just one election to the next, because we learn from high-performing systems that they begin with an aggressive proposal. They lean into that work over a series of several years, and sometimes it takes them a decade to achieve that goal of being world-class schools. And so Iowa already has good schools. We even have some great schools. And so it's time that we lean into the effort of making this transition from good to great to excellent schools. So I'll stop there, and we've got about 20 minutes, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that anyone has. Now, I apologize for talking at you guys for so long. That's not what I'm talking. This system, this whole package is premised on use the resources that you have more thoughtfully and strategically than you have in the past. And so the four-tier system moves us toward that over the long haul. This comprehensive set of recommendations that we have here will involve new resources. It will involve asking the legislature, asking the state to provide new resources to appropriately fund this if it's going to have an opportunity to be successful. So I think that we first have to look at are we using the money that we have as strategically and thoughtfully as we possibly can, and then have we put in place a plan that gives Iowa an opportunity to be among the highest performing systems in the world. And if that is the case, if we can satisfy those first two conditions, and then I think we can make a fair ask for more resources to fund this over the next decade.
In your background documents, you point out that education takes up about 58% of the state's budget. Should that be increased?
My job is to advocate for education, so I'm always going to say that the more resources we can put for education, better off the schools will be. It can be somebody else's job to advocate for funding for something else. So I will advocate that we should be increasing funding to education, but the educators should also take the education system should also take the responsibility that we haven't been good stewards in many cases of the resources that we have, and we haven't applied them very thoughtfully and strategically. So I think our work first begins by acknowledging that and going to work on using the money that we already have in the system in more strategic and thoughtful ways. Yeah. At this time, we're still working on that number, and that comes from the crafting of the legislative language. Timeline, how aggressive, how comfortable is Iowa in implementing that system? We're still working on that number right now. Right. Well, we'd like to increase the salary amounts enough that it's attractive to educators that are currently working in the field to come across to the new system. And so if we don't do anything with this new system, we probably are not going to be – if we don't add any new resources to the new salary structure, we're probably not going to be successful in that. So I think there is a dollar figure that's attached to – can we incentivize or sweeten the new compensation structure enough that we attract educators to come across to it. I mean, it will be a rational decision that every educator will make. They'll look at the new structure, they'll look at the existing structure and think about what's best for them. So we want to make sure that this has a probability of being successful, which will involve some number. There are a lot of factors involved in that budgeting decision, macro level state fiscal health, other programs in the state that are also advocating for increased funding after a couple of years of tight budgets in the state. So we're going to have to advocate for and push for education to be considered at the top of that list, and we will do that work. Sure. The minimum is $28,000. The average is around $35,000. And we can get you. We would hope so, because what you'd want to do is compress the scale, which would raise the initial teacher pay up by moving to the four-tier system. We can get you the exact numbers on those. I'm sure the $28,000 is right. I'm not sure about the $35,000. Right. So basically, sure. The compression of the scale basically means instead of waiting until very late in your career to earn a reasonable income, that you get that moved up earlier in your career. So that's what the term compression means. And so it's if you, right now you start at 30, 35,000, you end at 70, 75,000. It's to press, it's to compress that over the series of an educator's career. And so even if you had, sure, well, you top out now, and you would top out in this system as well. What we would want to do is instead of allocating more dollars just based on seniority or based on advanced degree credits, neither one of which are particularly good measures of good teaching, that you you earn more based on aligning your activities or your efforts or your performance with things that are good for kids in schools. So it's a strategic use of resources rather than just allocating money, allocating funds every year based on years' experience in advanced degree credits. That's the minimum. Most districts are over the minimum. I think the average, Dan, is that right? 28 is the statement. Yeah. And again, we can get the exact figure for you, but I think the average is around 35,000. Yeah.
For someone who is just graduated college and getting a job teaching.
That's right. Well, the difference between end-of-course exams and an exit exam is this is a suite of exams. So at the end of several courses in high school, you'd take one of these several end-of-course exams. And then we'd establish a cut point within those to say, here's minimum proficiency, and you need to be above that. And so together, that set of end-of-course exams or that suite of end-of-course exams can serve in the same capacity as a high school exit exam. The difference is with several end-of-course exams, through a student's career, you can get deeper into content than if you could if you just had a student take a two-hour exam once during their high school career. And the purpose of this really, again, is to try and more tightly align instruction at the high school level with what the standards are. So you want that tight alignment of here are your standards, here's how the standards are taught, and then here's the standards that are measured. So those should be tightly aligned. That's an option that we're looking at. So we're looking at several other states around the country that have implemented these end-of-course assessments. Right now, our thinking is that you would have to take this series of end-of-course exams, and there would be a cut score on that, and those passing those cut scores would be a requirement for graduation. There would be lots of opportunities for students that don't make that to retake or to be put back in with remedial supports to help them be successful. Probably wouldn't see that for a career teacher, for your rank and file teacher, you wouldn't see them at the end of their career making that that level. What you would see is that instead of having this ratcheting up over several years, you'd see a flattening of that. So you'd make that money instead of leaving with $70,000. You'd actually make that $70,000 earlier in your career. We're moving that pay that you would have had to wait late in your career to get earlier on, and compressing the scale.
So the more you teach, then the smaller raises you're getting.
You would get smaller raises, but you'd start out with a higher level. Well, there's still lots of options for educators to earn additional compensation on this. So what we know about compensation systems is the most important thing you do is you get the base pay right. And right now I'm not convinced that we have the base pay right. We can't retain people early in their careers, and people late in their careers that frankly want to go do something else, they stick around because the pay is so sweet toward the end of the career, and it's compounded by the retirement system. So you have people that have had the picture of the sailboat on their desk for 5 years wanting to get to the sailboat, and they keep sticking around for that extra step that's compounded by the retirement system. And so we want to compress the scale so that we get a reasonable base pay level for educators across the board.
This is more of a question for the next news conference, but how fair is it to ask Iowa taxpayers to overhaul the education system without telling them how much it's going to cost?
Well, we would tell them how much it's going to cost. And I think we have a responsibility, and it's incumbent on us to do that. This plan lays out the strategies, the steps that we think Iowa needs to take to be a world-class school system. I think we still have a responsibility to come forward with the exact legislative language that we're proposing and the exact dollar figure for Iowans to make a fully informed decision on that.
Yeah, our goal at this point is to lay out the vision and to get as much buy-in as we can for this vision and to improve it with the help of Iowans. And then when we've reached that broader consensus, we understand that we have to put a price tag on it. We want to use existing dollars as strategically as possible, and we know some new dollars will be needed as well going forward. This is a plan that will take, you know, a number of years to put in place. It won't be done overnight, so it won't necessarily be a huge price tag going into the next fiscal year. Speaking of fiscal years, too, I just wanted to point out an error on page 13 that will get corrected. This should say fiscal year 2012, not 2010. I'm sorry for that mistake, but we'll get that fixed.
So are you not unveiling the price tag today because people might get sticker shock?
No. We just really want people to focus on the vision and what we need to accomplish to have world-class schools in Iowa. You know, we've made a number of starts over the years to try to improve our schools, but we haven't done anything as systematic and transformational as this. We really want to build the vision for what we need to get done. Everybody knows this will not be cheap, and you know, we will work through the price tag as we have consensus about how we want to deliver world-class schools.
Part of the rationale for this going forward will be to ask Iowa to stop just dumping more cash into the system with the expectation that more cash will lead to better schools. That philosophy hasn't served this state or this nation very well. And so if we're going to put more cash into the system, we need to be thoughtful and strategic about where it's placed. And so we put together a plan here for as we add resources to education in the future, they should be thoughtfully and strategically directed.
When you talked about that third grade reading assessment and that if they didn't show progress, that would mark an end of social promotion. By making that statement implies social promotion will be in effect everywhere else.
No, we're just looking at third grade right now. In terms of a statewide policy, because it's so crucial children learn to read by the end of the third grade. You know, the children learn to read up to the end of third grade, then they really read to learn. And so that's such a crucial juncture, that third to fourth grade transition. We want to make sure students are reading before they leave third grade.
You mean asking, do you mean the NCLB waiver? Okay, the, well, it's, sure. Well, it's kind of two waivers that we were talking about. One is around a waiver from the No Child Left Behind accountability requirements. And so that has to do with generating a new system of accountability, Iowa developing a new system of accountability to determine which schools are successful and which schools are not, and then supports and consequences that come with that. So that involves, to a lesser degree, the Iowa legislature and the school start time waivers that you mentioned. The other set of waivers that we talked about is requesting from the legislature more flexibility for the Department of Education to allow waivers for innovative approaches, such as school start times. There are already waiver provisions built in for school start times. Actually, the process now is that's a decision that occurs locally. Because we were approving every single one of them, there wasn't really a process by which the waiver was determined. And so what schools are doing now is, as long as they have a public school board meeting on their changing the start time, they can set that wherever they want. We're currently engaged. The governor's asked us to work with Secretary Northey on school start times and how that impacts the state fair, and so we're working on that, talking about that right now, but we haven't reached any sort of conclusions on it at this time.
Sure.
Right. Well, what we'd like to see is in this request for greater waiver authority on state law, that it passed through a group such as the state board, and then we report back to the legislature every year on the things that we waived so that the legislature can see where we're granting that flexibility.
About 5.9% in 2009. When Florida started the program in 2002, they held back 13% of children for the first time, and in 2009 they were holding back 5.9%. It's not a punishment. It's really intended to be a very strong way to encourage that we make sure all third graders are reading by the time they leave third grade. And the Alliance for Excellence in Education Online has a lot of policy papers on third grade reading if anyone wants to go in and look at those, or I can provide them afterward.
So why is third grade magic? Why not
because, grade? Because developmentally some children just aren't ready to read in first grade, but by the end of third grade, most children are developmentally at the point where they should be reading.
Third grade is the transition year from learning to read to reading to learn. So that's why you make the stand that all kids need to be literate at the end of third grade.
In your value-added measures, you say they'll take into account student background characteristics and consider student growth when evaluating test results. It sounds like students are going to be sort of held to different standards based possibly on their demographic background.
Sure. Well, where students start from matters in terms of how they their performance levels. And poverty, English language learner ability, student disability factors, all these things have an impact on achievement results. And so what we want to do is not only care that students are achieving at a high level, but also we should care that students are making growth. So using a value-added framework allows us to look at how much students improve from one point in time to the next, stripping away all of those factors that have an impact on student achievement data.
But we're not just going to settle for growth and not meeting a high bar otherwise. High-performing school systems really do set high expectations for all children, and they tend to have relatively, many of them tend to have relatively, show relatively little difference in levels of achievement among children based on poverty versus affluence. And that's what we're aiming for. We want to really narrow the achievement gap as much as we possibly can.
It's on page 9, the third bullet down.
Talk about raising the grade point average for entry into teacher preparation to 3.0. What is it right now?
It's typically in the C range. I think 2.75 is fairly common.
Depends on the school, though.
It depends on the school. And there are a few schools that are in the B range.